So when I came over, start fucking.
Hello.
Wait. How does that go? At least you got the fuck ups out of the way early.
Oh, fuck. I stepped on the dog's ball.
From the burning mesas of the Arizona desert to the slot machine clad boardwalks of New Jersey, it's the Imaginarium with Scott and Todd. I'm Scott Colbert.
And I'm the horror nerd, Todd Staruch.
And Todd, you and I have had upon occasion over the course of the last 9 years or so of this podcast to talk about our issues with banks when we've had problems with our bank accounts, whether it's for whatever reason. And it's always been something negative to say about the banks. So here's something that is kind of negative, but also a huge positive. And because, you know, I've spent a lot of time bitching about banks, which I'm going to do at the start of the story, I thought it would only be to give equal time to the good part. So I had an issue with my bank account. And I called customer service, and I kid you not, after 42 minutes on the phone, they still could not verify my identity.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. They started off, you know, now, mind you, when I call in, they ask me to put in my PIN number and the last three of my social. So you would think that would be kind of enough to get through. But no. They asked me what the last two or three charges were on my bank account. Well, I don't know. You know, I knew generally what the amount of those charges might be, but I had no specific numbers. And so they asked me some other stuff. Then they asked me questions that where the answers were found through public information. Basically, it's addresses that I had 30 years ago.
Right. Yeah. They get that through like one of the credit bureaus or some shit like that.
I don't remember an address from 30 fucking years ago. Yeah. So I did the best I could. And so they put me on hold, come back, put me on hold. They tried to send me a text, you know, with a security number, but I wasn't getting the text. But for whatever reason, it wasn't coming through. And so I finally talked to a supervisor, and the best she could say was, well, you need to go into a branch office. And I was furious. I mean, I was seeing red at this point, because I had been going through this for 42 minutes. Well, I said, you know what? Just go fuck yourselves. And I hung up because that's the adult thing to do.
Right.
But then I filed a complaint with the CFPB, something I've never done before. That's how annoyed and angry I was. And Monday morning, and that was on a Saturday afternoon, Monday morning, I get a call from the branch manager where I opened my account. And she asked me about that, and I explained the situation. And she's like, well, I'm very glad that you filed that complaint because it's horrible. I hate it. We all hate it. It is probably one of the worst aspects of our bank. And whether she was saying that just to placate me or not, I don't know, but it sounded good at the time. To make a long story short, had to get a new debit card. The bank manager, and with BMO Harris, they actually make it at the branch. You don't have to wait for it in the mail. You can go into the branch and get it.
Right.
She drove over to my apartment to hand deliver it to me.
Wow. Are you kidding me?
a branch manager.
Huh.
So, and that kept me from closing my account. I mean, I'm not somebody who's got thousands or even hundreds or even tens of dollars in my account.
I was going to say, Scott, you do realize that the fact that there's no money in your account is not the bank's fault, right? You do understand that.
But the fact that, you know, she took the time to do that, that says something. So I have to give a shout out to Diana Wacker. That's her name, Diana Wacker, the branch manager of BMO Harris in North Phoenix. Went above and beyond, way above and beyond, and I appreciate that. So that's my good news story about a bank.
Okay.
And that's less about a bank than it is about a person, but I just wanted to, you know, mention that because I thought it was important. So,
very good.
Yeah.
If I ever open a bank account in Phoenix, I will be sure to use that branch.
Well, you know, honestly, outside of trying to get through to customer service, BMO Harris has been the best banking experience I've ever had of all the bank accounts and banks I've dealt with over the years. By far. By far, they've been the best. So,
Very cool.
Yeah. All right. So, anything new with you that?
No, not really. Other than I still can't believe that my daughter just turned 18. I still have some shell shock over that. But
she's an adult now,
which is hilarious to me. But we did have some fun. My father and I drove down and we went out to dinner for her birthday. And then this is my kid, right? Number one, she doesn't really like being the center of attention in like a big crowd or anything. She did not want a big party. And I finally got my ex-wife to understand that none of this is about her. It's about our daughter. You know, and all my daughter wanted was like a family dinner. And then the next night I took her and a small group of friends. They wanted to go to Dave and Buster's to have dinner and play video games. That's what she wanted to do. So that's my kid, you know?
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally cool. I mean, not going to lie. It saved me thousands and thousands of dollars. I'm like,
oh, okay, no kidding.
No problem. Pay for dinner and pay for, you know, some game cards, you know, so I treated everybody, you know, bought them the card to play games and stuff with. So, yeah. And then that was that. It's just the one thing, and I'm not a worrisome person by nature, Scott, but the one thing I just can't deal with is sometimes it's just her out like driving on her own, you know, and driving people around and stuff. I still have it in the back of my mind, like, oh, that's my kid out there. But other than that, it was fun. I still can't get over it. And now the waiting games begin. She's got all her college applications in, and now we're just waiting to hear, you know, acceptance or rejection or whatever. So we'll find out in a few weeks where she's going to be going to school. So
yeah, then you'll know exactly how deep into your pocket you'll have to dig.
Listen, man, I have all read it. Like, I think about that all the time, you know, about how am I going to pay for this? Because I just don't have a lot of money, made mistakes along the way, really didn't save properly, plus some bad luck thrown in, you know, but we'll figure it out. Other people do. You know, there's people who have far less than I do, and they somehow figure it out. So, so that's that.
You know, it's funny talking about your daughter's 18th birthday. I don't remember what I did for my 18th birthday. I remember my 19th birthday, but not my 18th. I couldn't even tell you what I did for it or how I celebrated it. I honestly have no clue.
I really don't remember either, But back then, like when I was that age, I was kind of introverted. So we probably just had like a family party at the house or something, because that was just what we did back then. You know, my parents couldn't afford. We had a big family, as you know, there's 7 siblings. So my parents couldn't really afford like big parties or anything, you know, all the time. So we probably just had the usual family over and had a party in the house in the backyard. That's probably what we did.
Yeah, you know? I'm sure that's probably what we did too. And the only reason I remember my 19th was because they were raising the drinking age to 21 and I got grandfathered in.
Ah.
And so on my 19th birthday, myself and a bunch of friends from work went over to this Mexican restaurant called Willie and Guillermo's. And I got plastered. I got stupid drunk. And it's long gone now, but there was a picture of me sitting at the outside table. And there's like 10 or 12 glasses right in front of me. And they were all mine. It was, that was an experience. And it's funny because two of the people who were at that party were actually recovering alcoholics. And, and they said to me, once I started getting into recovery, they said, we knew from that moment, you know, from that night, that you're going to be one of us.
Nice.
Yeah, so. All right. So,
speaking of money, though, I don't suppose you have an extra $1,300 laying around, because they are having, you know, the Phantom of the Opera closes in a couple of weeks. On the final curtain call is April the 16th. So a few days before that, they're having a closing gala, and you get it for your ticket. You get orchestra seats for the show. And then you get to go to the show gala at the Lambs Club down the street. And they're going to have a whole bunch of people who have been in the show, you know, for the last 35 years. They're going to have hors d'oeuvres, premium open bar, intimate cast performances, photo ops and autographs with all the cast members for the low, low price of only $1,300.
Intimate cast performance, it sounds like a lap dance from Robert Guillaume.
Dude, I'll sign me up. I mean, you know, sign me the fuck up. And like, even if I just had, like, I am so tempted to do it. I really am. I am so tempted to do it. But I would never forgive myself for spending $1,300.
You know what? Save that and spend a fraction of that to go see Steve Hackett.
You're right.
Because he's going to be, he's got 3 nights in New Jersey.
Yes, yes.
East Rutherford, I think, somewhere.
Yes, yes, he will be playing close. I want to go, and just real quick, and then we'll get on to our main topic. So I would like to go see the revival of Sweeney Todd with Josh Groban. And look,
I would love to see that.
I understand all about prices going up and it's not cheap to put on a Broadway show. And I get it. Seats for the rear mezzanine on a weeknight are $200 plus fees.
Yep.
So altogether it's like $230. And I'm like, you know, come on. And I actually looked at tickets like later in the year, because he's going to be in it until January of next year. So like right now.
Oh, wow. I didn't know he was going to be in it that long.
Yeah. That's... Yeah. He's going to be in it for a long time. There's a couple of weeks where he's not. And he's traveling or doing something else. But there's like a week in October and a week in November where he will not be in it. But so I even, you know, like right now, it's like the hottest ticket on it. It's sold out every night. So I said, all right, let me look in like July, August. It's still crazy expensive. So I don't know what I'm going to do. Just like sports and concerts, the average person is being priced out of a Broadway show. you know? You just, and, you know, that's a chunk of change right there.
Well, that is, but that's, Broadway has always been overpriced. Broadway has been that way for at least 35 or 40 years. I remember when, it was the last time I was in New York, actually, when I was visiting my friend Chris, he got tickets to see Into the Woods, because it was playing at the time. And that was when Felicia Rashad was playing as the Wicked Witch. And even then, tickets were $75, I think, a piece. And 1989, that was a big chunk of change. Now, he got it through TKTS, so he didn't pay that much, but that's what the tickets were. They were $75 tickets. They were good seats, but it was still ridiculously expensive. And the programs and T-shirts and souvenirs were just out of this world. You know, as much as I wanted to get a T-shirt, I just couldn't justify the $30, whatever it was, at the time. And I still can't justify $30 for a fucking T-shirt.
Oh, for sure. In a way, I understand it. I mean, some of these shows, especially an elaborate show like The Phantom, is not cheap to put on.
No, not at all.
So I do understand it, and I'm willing to pay a price. You know what I mean? It's like when you go to a fine restaurant, like, you understand, you know, if you're going to go out to one of the top restaurants in Manhattan, it's going to cost you money, but it's worth the experience. But it's the cheapest ticket you can find on the aftermarket right now for one of the final Phantom shows is about $400. I'm so glad I've seen it a whole bunch of times, you know, already, because people who waited, but then of course, right, in an interview, Andrew Lloyd Webber says, yeah, I could definitely see it coming back at some point. And I'm like, well, there you go. Right. So,
well, I mean, it's a no brainer. It's going to be
Sweeney Todd's back, right?
Yeah. Although, surprisingly, I mean, it's been back in various incarnations, you know, concerts and stuff like that. But it's the first actual full revival on Broadway since the original production, which I think is very cool.
Very. I saw it, I want to say, like 2005, maybe. And Patti LuPone was Mrs. Lovett, but it was a scaled down production.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like the original. I mean, it was good, don't get me wrong. And you really can't go wrong with Patti LuPone, but it definitely was not the same. So yeah, I'm going to end up going. Who the fuck am I kidding? My birthday's in June. People, you know, relatives, I'm 55, I'm going to be 55. And relatives, like my dad, always give me money for my birthday. So maybe I'll spend it on Broadway tickets.
Yeah, there you go.
Right? There you go.
Oh, wow. Because, you know, that really is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You know,
it is. It is. So it is.
You know, and we need to pamper ourselves at least once or twice a year for something like that. Yeah, I think it would be too much for, like, a concert. Like to see Genesis or Peter Gabriel, and, you know, we've talked about ticket prices for concerts many times. For something like Sweeney Todd, I would just kind of have to bite the bullet and grab my ankles and get the ticket.
Yeah, I think I will.
Good.
All right.
All right. Oh. Is that before or after you get a dog?
Oh, dude, stop. Everybody wants me to get a dog. And I'm like, well, who's going to help me pay for this dog and take care of this dog and everything, you know? But I'm very close. I'm very close.
Well, you said you were going to get one when Everett was on the show, so.
I don't recall saying that I was going to for sure get one. But
I'll have to play the show back, because I can't remember if you said it on the show or after.
Oh, God.
I'm pretty sure you said it on the show. But if it's recorded, I will play that for
well, you. Well, you know full well I never actually listened back to the old show, so.
Even when I'm editing it, I don't.
I know, right? Are you watching Picard this season?
I've Did got ADD so bad, I can't wait week to week. So I'm just waiting until the final episode so I can watch, so I can binge. Okay.
I fell into the trap and I started watching it from the beginning. I took a little extended lunch today to watch today's episode. And now don't know how I'm going to wait another week for the finale. I won't say a word other than it definitely got its mojo this season for sure.
Is next week the finale, the last episode?
Yes. Right. And this season is really good. So we'll talk about it after you've binged it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that won't take me but a weekend to probably watch the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The individual episodes are pretty brisk. They're like 48, 49 minutes. They're good. They're brisk.
Oh, good.
Yeah. All right. So for this week's topic, we haven't done one of these lists in a while.
It has been a long time.
Yeah. So for this week, we're going to talk about our favorite movie villains.
Yes.
And I'm kind of stoked because I always like the villains more than the heroes.
Well, I've always found villains to be far more interesting.
than
the protagonist. Because, I mean, what it boils down to is, good versus evil. But good characters always seem to me to be very one-dimensional. I find Darth Vader is a far more interesting character than Luke Skywalker.
For sure.
And it's just always been the case, I think. This is going to be a lot of fun. I've got one that's not necessarily a movie villain, but he is a villain.
Okay.
And they did make a movie with him in it, so...
All right, fair enough. And for maybe some new listeners who don't understand how Scott and I do this, we're not saying that these are necessarily the best. We like to just talk about our favorites. So, because it's always subjective, So these are just the villains that we think are cool.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Start us off, my friend.
All right. Well, my first one, this may be on your list.
I figured we might duplicate a couple of them.
Yeah, I really tried to pick villains that I truly loved that weren't maybe on the mainstream, but you can't have a list of villains and not have this one, which is the Wicked Witch of the West.
We do. There you go, right?
Well, I know that's one of your favorite movies.
Yes.
So yeah. I figured it might be on it. And that's why I almost didn't put it on, but I really, really had to.
Because you have to. You have to.
She scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. And the first couple of times I saw The Wizard of Oz, especially, the end when she's melting. I'm melting. Her voice was just so
what a world,
creepy.
What a world.
Yeah, it warped my mind, and... Her little henchmen, the flying monkeys,
yeah,
they creep the fuck
They're
out
creepy.
Of me too. and Margaret Hamilton was such a fantastic actress, and she did such a brilliant job as the Wicked Witch of the West. And the fact that she even got burns and got fairly seriously injured during the filming of that movie,
yep,
and still carried on with it. Making movies back then was not a safe thing to do.
Oh, and they didn't give a shit about actor safety.
No, they didn't.
No, God, no.
Buddy Epson nearly died from poisoning from the makeup from Tin Man. So that's why he wasn't in it. And, they had somebody else for the part. But, I couldn't imagine making a movie back then. without any of the safe. Maybe I'm just too much of a pussy anymore, but.
When, so in Hollywood Studios in Disney in Florida, they, I think they took it, it's no more now. They took the ride away, but during the Great Movie Ride, one of the vignettes was The Wizard of Oz. And, it, you know, you're going down the yellow brick road and then all of a sudden there's the red smoke and there's the Wicked Witch. And I always thought that was still so cool. Even as I got older, I would wait for the Wicked Witch's appearance, you know? Yeah, man, that's a good one. And yep, she was definitely on my list. That's why I always have more than five, because I know there's going to be something we're going to duplicate, but how could you not?
Well, you know, exactly.
That is an iconic one right there.
Yeah, definitely.
Good call, man. All right. I'm starting off with one that might surprise people because it's me, but I have always loved this character and always was Disney's big bad in the animated movies, and that's Maleficent.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And it's, yeah. If you go back and you watch, she is very dark and very creepy and very scary. When she has Prince Philip locked in the dungeon in the castle, and she gives that speech about how he's going to be down there forever, and he is never going to see her again. You are never going to see her again. You're going to die down here. That is some dark shit for a children's movie.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's why when the Angelina Jolie movie came out, I was pissed about two things. One, they softened her so much. And kind of, you know, oh, she's not so bad. She's just misunderstood. You know, that pissed me off. And I don't know if you saw Maleficent with Angelina Jolie.
No, I didn't.
Well, I'm about to spoil the fuck out of it for you. At towards the very end, right? So throughout the movie, Maleficent has this toady that that does her bidding. He's like a familiar and he can change shape, right? And he usually takes the shape of a crow, so he can spy on people for her. It's at the end and it's the climactic battle, right? In the castle. It kind of follows the animated story somewhat. It's the final battle, right? And you're just waiting for Maleficent to change into the dragon and just fucking lay waste to everything like she does in the animated. Nope. She casts a spell on this little toady and turns him into the dragon. And it was so anticlimactic. I wanted to rip my theater seat out and throw it at the screen when that happened. I hate it when they take like someone that's supposed to be a true villain and soften the fuck out of them. Maleficent was not remorseful, you know, in the animated. She went down with a fight, but not in this one, and it just pissed me off to no end, because I just always loved Maleficent. I just thought she was so cold and calculating and scary as a kid, you know? So Maleficent is first on, well, not in any particular order, but she's my first favorite villain for today.
Yeah, that's a good one. I remember when you talked about that on the show, how much you were really rather disgusted with the movie.
And that's an understatement. The second movie, oh my God, it pissed me off even more.
Well, now, if you hated the first one, why would you even watch the sequel?
I will tell you, for no other reason than I just like fairy tale movies.
All right, fair enough.
I like the special effects. I like the cinematography and the set pieces and stuff, and I wanted to see if they would redeem themselves, and they did not.
Yeah, well, you didn't really think they would, did you?
No, but and I do like Angelina Jolie. Like, she was good. Like, she was good as the character. Like, the makeup and the mannerisms and everything, she was cool. but they just fucked it up.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Okay. Well, my next one is one of those that might be off the beaten path a little bit. But it's a Malcolm McDowell character, Alex from A Clockwork Orange.
Almost was on my list.
Really?
And then I said, nope, Scott's going to pick it.
I'm surprised you guessed that, actually.
It's a great villain.
It's a great villain. It's one of the few Kubrick movies I absolutely love to death. And I don't know that it's really aged all that well, but I'll tell you something. It still has the same impact as it did right back then. Now, I obviously was only maybe 6 or 7 when it originally came out, so I didn't see it until years later. But there's something very deeply disturbing about that movie, as it's meant to be. But I just love that character of Alex, and I think more than the character, it's Malcolm McDowell's portrayal. It's easily, I would say, the best role he's ever had. Maybe next to Oh, Lucky Man or something like that. But for me, it is the role that I always think of when I think of Malcolm McDowell. And his singing in the rain, you can't think of anything other than Malcolm McDowell when you hear that song anymore.
Exactly.
You know, and whenever I see the actual Singing in the Rain movie, I expect Gene Kelly to whip out this giant white phallus.
Yeah, man, that is a good one. And when I met Malcolm McDowell at Texas Frightmare Weekend, that's the poster I had him sign, was A Clockwork Orange. And he's had a ton of great roles, you know, but that one, you know, a little of the old ultraviolence.
Yeah.
That's a good call right there. Alex DeLarge.
Yeah. It's just such an iconic, it's an iconic movie. And it's an iconic character, and it's a great adaptation of the Anthony Burgess novel.
Agreed. Okay. My second pick is from, you know that I'm a big fan of old Hollywood, you know, the golden age, and I love this movie, and I love Billy Wilder, and the character is Phyllis Dietrichson from Double Indemnity, played by Barbara Stanwyck. Yeah, I'm going old school. And I like the character. Well, first of all, I like Barbara Stanwyck, but you gotta love a villain who coldly and calculatingly tries to get someone else to do their dirty work.
Yep.
And for anyone who's never seen Double Indemnity, it's a film noir where, you know, this woman, Phyllis Dietrichson, meets her husband's insurance agent, played by Fred McMurray, and convinces him to murder her husband, but they have to make it look like an accident, because that's where the title of the film comes from. There's a double indemnity clause where the company will pay double the amount in case of an accidental death. So they try to make it look like an accident, and then the thing starts to unravel. You know, obviously this plan, and she is just so cold and cruel and calculating. And there's just something about an old black and white movie, you know, about murder and double crossing and all that stuff. And you have to see it to see how the character is played by Barbara Stanwyck. She is mean, let's just put it that way. And that's why I've just always liked that movie, because of the villain, the villainess, if you will. So, yeah, that's my second pick for my list.
That's.
I had to go to the vault for that one. I had to really think about it.
No, I know the movie. I've seen it, and obviously I know Barbara Stanwyck. I just don't remember a whole lot of the movie or her, you know, or her character. But that's a good choice. And I went into the vault for my next one. And it's from around the same era, and it's also a film noir. And it's from 1947. I'll give you a guess.
1947. So 1947. Nightmare Alley?
Nope. It's Richard Widmark as Tommy Udo in Kiss of Death.
Nice. Okay.
I will never, in fact, I can see it right now, even as I'm thinking about it. When he ties up the old lady with the telephone cord in the wheelchair and throws her down the stairs, and that psychotic look he's got in his eye and the laugh that he has as he's watching her fall to her death down the stairs. I will never, ever, ever forget that scene. It's just burned into me. And he is such a psychopath, the character Tommy Udo. And Richard Widmark just plays him so beautifully in that. Absolutely one of my favorite evil characters ever.
Yeah, that's a good one. God, I saw that a long time ago. I just looked it up again, and I'm looking at the movie poster, and it's one of them old Hollywood film noir posters, and there's a big thing on it that says suitable only for adults.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, and Victor Mature is in it as well.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good one. Huh. And our friend Carl Malden, who was in pretty much every movie in the 1940s.
Yeah, pretty much.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, and that really made Richard Widmark's career.
For sure. Cool. All right. So for my next one, this one is a little more fun. It is a much maligned movie that I happen to like. I know it's awful, but I happen to like it. And it's Alan Rickman playing the Sheriff of Nottingham in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves with Kevin Costner. He is the best thing about that movie. I'm going to tear your heart out with a spoon. Sire, why a spoon? Because it's dull and it'll hurt more. I just love it. Like, he is so over the top in his villainy. And I just love him in that movie. And it's like, I can't picture anyone but Alan Rickman doing it, you know? And you know, when the old witch, the lady, you know, tells him, "Oh, you have to sleep with Maid Marian right now. She'll give us a son," and he's trying, but she's fighting him off. Robin Hood's trying to break the door down, and she's like, "Do it now." He's like, "I'm trying. What do you, you know?" Oh, it's just great. But he's also just a very cruel, like, villain. He just happens to play it in such an over the top way. And dude, we all know that the movie is just not good. Kevin Costner's English accent comes and goes, you know. But I don't know why. I just have an affinity for that movie. And I can't explain it. I'm tired of defending it all these years. I just enjoy watching it, you know. And and mainly because of Alan Rickman as the Sheriff of Nottingham. I just think he's a fun villain, chewing up scenery, you know. and I just love it. And I make no apologies for the fact that I like that movie. Sorry.
Well, no,
sorry, not sorry.
we like what we like.
Dude, I take so much shit because I like that movie.
Well, and you deserve it.
I know.
Yeah, there's no getting around that.
You man, I like Waterworld too. So there.
Yeah. I've never been a big Kevin Costner fan.
I know you have said that. Yeah, you have always maintained that.
But I like Alan Rickman. So anytime Alan Rickman is picked as a favorite villain, that's okay in my book because Alan Rickman is so awesome. In fact, I was going to actually pick him for Snape in the Harry Potter movies, but I wanted to go a little bit less obvious. And really, by the time you get to the end of the series, you're still not really sure if he's a villain or not. So, you know. That's a good pick. So here's my fun pick, my fun villain pick. And I was thinking about this, and I went back and forth on if I should have them in my top five or not. And ultimately, I decided I was going to just because it is fun. And it's in my favorite superhero movie. And it's Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor.
Oh, good one. Good call, man. I like it. I like it.
And the thing is, it's not even that he's not even good as a villain. And the character Lex Luthor is very inept for the most part up until he gets the kryptonite. And nearly drowned Superman towards the end of the movie. He and Ned Beatty, who's his partner in crime, so to speak, they're inept. They're a little buffoonish, which is something that you don't necessarily associate with the character of Lex Luthor, at least not from the comics. So the fact that they gave them almost the comic relief was a little refreshing. And at that point, you know, Gene Hackman hadn't really done anything like that. You know, he was doing, you know, movies like The French Connection,
right,
and The Conversation, you know, real serious, gritty type movies. So when, you know, he's doing something like Lex Luthor in Superman in 1979, I think it was just a breath of fresh air, and it showed another side of him that you weren't used to seeing. And it's just such a fun movie. I absolutely love that original Superman movie with Christopher Reeve.
Oh, absolutely, man.
Absolutely. It's not perfect by any stretch, but it's still my favorite. It was one of the first. It was the first superhero movie I ever saw. I mean, mm-hmm. They had others before that, but most of those were on TV. And I remember the Superman TV series with George Reeve, you know, who was a little bit too old for Superman because I think he was in his late 30s or early 40s when he did that. And Superman had a bit of a punch.
Yeah, he did. He did.
You know? He did.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was more like the Man of Steel than the Man of Flab.
Yeah. Know? My favorite thing about that Superman, the George Reeves one, is when some random criminal would be shooting at him and he would just puff out his chest and deflect the bullets. Yeah. And then invariably, every single time, the guy would run out of bullets and he would throw the gun at Superman and Superman would duck. He would duck every time. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. No, dude, I still get, I'm not going to lie, I still get chills when I watch Superman and when he builds the fortress and he goes on that little time journey where he ages. And then when you see him in the costume for the first time and he takes off in flight, it's fucking awesome. It's fucking absolutely awesome. Got the signed poster hanging right in my living room. It says, "You will believe a man can fly" on it. I love that poster.
And at the time, I did.
Yep. Now, when they show behind the scenes of how they did it, you're like, wait, that was it? Like, that's how they made him fly? You know? No, that's a good one. That is a fun villain. Otisburg. Yep. It's just a little bitty place. Otisburg. Oh, it's great. Oh, good. That's a good pick, man. I didn't even think of that one. But that's a good pick. All right. For my next one, I'm going to go a little more sinister. And I do love, love, love this movie and this character. And it is one of the, for my money, one of the best Stephen King adaptations. And it's Annie Wilkes in Misery, played by Kathy Bates. I duplicate you?
No, you didn't.
Oh, okay. Man, she is something else. And I have seen movies that no human should watch. And when she smashes his ankle with the sledgehammer, I still fucking cringe every single time. And that's not even, somehow that's worse than what happens in the book. Because in the book, she chops off his foot.
Yeah, and then cauterizes it with the blowtorch. Yeah,
right. So, which is far fucking worse. But somehow in the movie, I wish she had done that. Because when she hits his foot and it just goes like a 90-degree angle, I'm like, oh, dear God. You know?
Those things make me just want to hurl.
Yeah. Yeah, and she is just so... That's another one of those roles, right? I want you to think about it right now. You can't imagine anyone else playing that role, even though I'm sure other people auditioned for it, which if I looked it up, there's probably some surprising ones on the list, you know? But, oh, Paul. You've been out of your room, haven't you? I found your key. Oh, and you're like, oh, no. Annie, whatever you're thinking of doing, please don't do it. Yeah, man, she is chilling.
Yeah, Kathy Bates was absolutely brilliant in that. And that's one of the few horror movies that have actually won Academy Awards. And I think she won for that, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe she did.
I saw that on a date. It was the first date with this guy that I worked with. And I can't remember his name now. I barely remember what he looked like. But towards the end, when shit's going down and Paul's trying to escape and he's going through the house and whatnot, it's really intense. You've got the music, and I reached over and went to grab his hand. And somehow my hand ended up not on his, but in his lap. And I didn't plan it that way. I just had bad aim. But it worked out well later on, but it was embarrassing at the time. But such a good movie. Not necessarily a good first date movie, because we didn't have a second one after that. But... that's a great villain. I had a Stephen King villain in mind, but he wasn't in the movie a whole lot. And if we were doing villains from books, he definitely would have been in it. But it was Greg Stilson from The Dead Zone.
Okay. Yeah. Good one. Yeah.
That's one that didn't make my list. And I thought about Pennywise, too. And it's funny, I think up to this point, because I don't know what your next pick is going to be, you would think that given that we have a penchant for horror movies, I write horror novels, you work with Theater of Terror, and you're not immune to liking a good horror movie now and then.
Absolutely not.
For all intents and purposes, none of my picks are horror villains.
You know, I thought about that. And for no real reason, I decided not to go with any of them. Like, I could have picked Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, Jason. I just thought that was a little cliche almost.
And really they're all kind of boring. The only one that I actually thought about choosing would be Pinhead from Hellraiser. But again, he's far more interesting of a villain in the story, than he is in the movie. So I didn't pick him for the same reason that I didn't put Greg Stilson on the list. Again, if you're going by novels or short stories, whatever, he probably would have been on the list. But Annie Wilkes, Cock a Doodle.
And if you... He didn't get out of the cock-a-doodle car. Yeah. Dude, he's fucking nuts. So I had to look it up. The original choice for Kathy Bates, for Annie Wilkes, was Bette Midler.
No, that would have been good too.
And she declined it. A decision, I'm reading it here, a decision she would later call stupid. And the writer, William Goldman, pushed Carl Reiner to audition Kathy Bates. And it says here she read one line from the scene and that said, nope, you're in.
Rob Reiner, I think you mean.
Rob Reiner. Why I say Carl Reiner?
Because that's Rob his Reiner. Father?
Yeah, it's the first Reiner that came to mind. So there we go. Bette Midler could have been Annie Wilkes, which would have been interesting.
That really would have been interesting. You know? I think she could have done a fantastic job.
I think
job.
So, too. Why not?
Yeah. You know? She definitely would have made that character unique and her own. And probably very different from what Kathy Bates did. Sure. Bette Midler is a great dramatic actress. I mean,
oh, absolutely. I love me some Bette Midler.
She was fantastic in The Rose, which isn't a great movie by any stretch of the imagination, but she was fantastic in it. Yeah. She does my favorite rendition of Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy.
Yes. I like it.
I love Bette Midler. She started off in gay bathhouses with Barry Manilow as her piano player.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Didn't know that, did you?
I did not.
Well, that's honest to God true.
I don't doubt you.
All right, so for
taking
my
a second to process, that's all. All right, what's your last? What was your last villain?
All right, this is one that isn't necessarily a movie villain, although they did make a movie from the TV series, but it's Al Swearengen from Deadwood.
So this is the first one where you got me. I did not watch Deadwood, so I have no frame of reference for this.
What I love about his character, and Al Swearengen is played by, his name just went out of my head, Ian McShane.
Oh, okay. So it's the Ian McShane character. Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right. So now I know who you're talking about, but I still never watched the show, but I know who you mean now. Okay.
He's such a great character that even though he's evil, you still can't help but like him anyway. He's a very funny character. And he probably says the word cocksucker more in one episode than most people say in their lives. It's a very sweary TV series. but of course, it was written by David Milch, so no surprise. But he's just a brilliant character. And what makes it even better is, he's based on a real person. Everybody in that movie was based on a real person or was a composite of a couple of different people. So there's a lot of factual things going on as far as the people go. And it's just, it's responsible for barbed wire kisses for sure. The flavor of Deadwood has absolutely infiltrated that book because I was watching it almost nonstop as I was writing Barbed Wire Kisses. And it's absolutely one of my favorite series. And aside from being one of my favorite villains, he's probably Al Swearengen. Swearengen is one of my favorite characters of anybody ever, period. Just go on YouTube and type in Al Swearengen and watch some of the scenes that Ian McShane does. It's absolutely brilliant. He is such a fantastic actor and so underrated. He's in a lot. You see him here and there.
Yeah.
He just really is so fucking good in everything he does, but especially as Al Swearengen. He makes profanity sound like poetry.
Cool. All right. Okay. Good one. I had a bunch on my list, you know, that I was kind of tossing around, and then I'm like, am I going with like iconic? Am I going with best? Or am I just going with favorite? And I am going to go just purely on a which ones are my favorites. I am going to go as villains go. It's a very specific, this villain has been around for decades, and I'm going with a very specific one. So in a general level, I'm going with the Joker, because it's obviously Batman's foil, specifically Heath Ledger's version of the Joker from The Dark Knight.
Okay.
Just because, you know, when he was, I clearly remember, this is why I never go crazy over casting notices. You know, when they announced Heath Ledger was going to be the Joker, everybody shit all over it. And then he won a fucking Academy Award and he was amazing as the Joker. But there have been so many incarnations of the Joker, some good, some not good. But people forget, like, in the comics, the Joker really was fucking crazy and did fucked up shit. Like, if you read The Killing Joke, you know, and it's really dark and he really is insane, you know? So I just love him as a villain. I love all the incarnations, you know? And I hate, like, people have these debates of, like, who was the best. I'm like, well, why does there have to be a best, you know? Nicholson's Joker was great in his way, you know? Cesar Romero was great in his way, you know? I just like Heath Ledger. The only thing that always drove me crazy about that movie, and it's a nitpick, but the Joker goes out of his way in the movie constantly to say, I'm just a crazy guy. Do I look like a man with a plan? The answer is yes, because everything that happens in the movie had to happen exactly as you planned it in order to get to your goal. So don't say, oh, I'm just a guy that just does shit. I'm chaotic. I don't have a plan. You kind of do, though, you know?
Yeah.
Like when he put the bomb inside sewed the bomb inside the guy, it like he had to count on himself getting arrested and everything, like for all of that to happen. So that's always been a nitpick of mine, but as villains go, for me, the Joker as a character is way the fuck up there, from comics to animated. You know, Mark Hamill as the Joker in Batman the Animated Series is fantastic, you know. So yeah, I think the Joker is just one of the coolest villains ever, and that's my last one. I had some honorable mentions. Like, I was going to go James Bond, and I was going to go with either Blofeld or Goldfinger, you know, just because I'm a James Bond fanatic. So, and then I had a Nurse Ratched.
I'm actually surprised that you didn't pick her.
I almost did.
For sure, if she was going to be on your list.
I just almost said it, and then I went with the Joker instead, because I said, okay, we're talking about favorites here. And Joker has always been, I know it's cliche, but my favorite Batman villain. So at the last minute. I said, nope, I'm going with the Joker. And then I had Hannibal Lecter and Amon Goeth from Schindler's List, played by Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah.
There are stories that he looked so convincing in his SS costume that, you know, they had a lot of the people in Schindler's List were actual Holocaust survivors that they couldn't handle it. You know, they couldn't handle it seeing him in his costume, and they broke down and just couldn't deal with it. That's how convincing he was. And I believe it. He was scary as fuck in that movie.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Did you have any honorable mentions?
I mentioned one. Greg Stilson from the Dead
Zone. That's right.
Pennywise really was going to be on there as well. But again, I really wanted to stay away from obvious choices. And it's funny, usually when we do these top five lists, we always have, we talk about the best,
then we have the
worst, and one that we hated. I can't really think of one. So
really?
What's yours?
My one, just because it's another Batman villain, and it's because they turned him into such a joke, and it's Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
In the comics, again, like especially the older comics, he's really fucking cool. No pun intended. But in the movie, he's just a walking pun machine and one-liner, and he wasn't scary. He was just goofy and stupid, and I just hated it. And another one that I hated is what's the fucking guy's name? He played Lex Luthor in Batman versus Superman. Jesse Eisenberg.
Really? I kind of liked him.
When did Lex Luthor become like a twitching Tourette syndrome patient? You know, like he's supposed. Yeah, no. But yeah, those are two. I mean, I could probably come up with others that I didn't really like.
I'm sure if I thought about it, given enough time, I could probably come up with villains that I don't like. But I just right now, off the top of my head, I can't think of any. It's hard to have.
I got a good one. From Superman 4, Nuclear Man.
Well, yeah, there you go. Okay. I've kind of wiped that movie out of my head. So
there you go. But look, and just like that, dude, we are at the end of our time.
Oh,
and that was a good one.
Yes.
Villains are awesome.
They are. Maybe at some other point we might do horror villains or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, for sure. And because we didn't say that for sure, but for this time. But it's interesting how we both kind of just shied away from it.
Yeah, it
you
is.
You know what I mean? Just like, well, I swear to God, folks, we didn't plan that.
No,
we really didn't. We both kind of just viewed it the same way.
Yeah, because anybody who knows the show, no, we don't plan anything.
No, God, no. The fact that we agreed on a topic is a huge step for us. So, good stuff, all right. Man.
What have you got going on?
Well, I really am trying to get back into the writing game. My our buddy Mark Boutros and I are starting to work on a feature. Believe it or not, I have put more thought into Street Meat. I did not write any of it down, but I did think about it, I promise. And on the Theater of Terror front, Our screening at Smod Castle is coming up next month in April on the 22nd. Go to smodcastlecinemas.com to get your tickets. It's going to sell out, and I don't want to hear about it like last time, you know, at the last minute. Oh, I should have bought my ticket. Yeah, you should have. It's $10 plus like a dollar service fee or some shit like that. Come and hang out with us. I know you have 10 bucks. Don't buy Starbucks tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
You know, put the 10 bucks in your pocket and come hang out with us. We're going to have a lot of fun. And then that's about it. Other than that, like for whatever it is, like the month of March, man, my real job just kicked my ass. So I haven't done much beyond that. Trying to get back in the saddle.
Well, I can understand that.
What about you?
Slowly, as I said, slowly getting back into the writing thing. And until I actually finish something this year, you can check out my previous work at Amazon.com, pick up the physical copies, or you can get the digital ebooks of my work wherever ebooks are sold. And of course, you can always buy or use your tokens or points, whatever Audible is calling them this month, to get the audiobook versions of my novels.
And folks, I know I have said this before, and I'm going to repeat myself. You owe it to yourself to listen to Scott's books on audio, because then he hit the jackpot on all of them when it comes to the narrator who reads the books. I just, trust me.
Yes, I was very, very lucky. Very lucky with that. So, All right.
That's it.
And until next time, may all of your journeys be filled with pure imagination.
I hate this so much.